I'm excited about talking to him today.
You sound really excited.
That's like people that say, oh, that's really funny, and they aren't laughing or they don't have a smile on their face.
Yeah, or when someone says LOL, yeah. And you want to say, you fucking liar. I'm here with you. I can see you.
Anyway, this is the Movie Schmovie Podcast.
Movie Schmovie.
Episode number 40.
Yeah.
Kind of been catching up on some random movies. I think I have, at least. What have you been up to?
Watching movies. Sleeping a lot. Because that's what you do after you get off of work.
Sleep.
Our adult lives hinder the opportunity to record as often as we'd like to, but
yeah, but I mean,
we are here,
thankfully.
So
we're with John again too,
right?
Let's point that out.
We haven't really like formally introduced John. Like we introduced him that episode, but not he's permanente. Can we say that?
Permanente.
Kaiser Permanente.
You just said that, yeah. Okay. I thought of insurance or something when you just said that.
He's a permanent fixture on this podcast, so get fucking used to it. All right?
Had to make it explicit just there, didn't
I
you?
I did.
Why do we put the explicit tag on the episode
if it can't be explicit, right?
Making it worth it.
Welcome, John.
Yeah,
all my life, man? I've wanted to be third chair.
We'll mark that off your
list. Yeah, right, I know.
Done.
Yeah. Right, done and done.
Marriage, children, third chair.
Yep.
Right. There it is. So, yeah, I mean, basically, we've seen a lot of films over the past couple of weeks. I think before we get into the two films that we'll be talking about in more, you know, more in depth later on in the podcast, we're going to kind of just throw some titles out there that we've seen recently. You were telling me about one that you saw earlier. That was on your must-see list of the year.
Right.
Sent me of nothing that you'd actually seen yet.
Right.
But,
movies I must see.
And who told you that you must see them?
The blog did.
What blog?
I don't know. It was some blog I'd never heard of. And then it just said
blacked
out.
You just landed on a blog page?
Yeah. And the movie is a Norwegian movie called Oslo, August 31st. It's about a guy that's a drug addict.
Okay.
That decides he wants to straighten out his life. But he's handsome. He's talented. But he hates himself. And that is he's trying to retread old memories that he's kind of ruined. He's ruined his relationships with people, and he's kind of recounting his steps and trying to see if he can talk to his ex-girlfriends and family kind of hates him. They don't treat him very well, but he has a lot of things going for him, but he doesn't realize it. So it's
and what'd you think of the movie overall?
It was really good. Very real. I don't see that very often.
Is it on demand or how did you, is it in theaters right now?
No.
Okay.
I downloaded it. It's only showing in like New York.
It's summertime, Ronald, and you watched a movie about real people.
Right.
How dare you?
I know. I should have seen something with fantasy.
Did you know Battleship was on DVD?
Oh, man.
Already?
Speaking of which, Rihanna's in it, so that lowers
the credibility. Actually one of the ones I was going to say I saw. I had an evening of horrible films. Geez. I watched Battleship, The Raven, John Cusack, you know, Baltimore represent.
Right.
Both were bad. Battleship was so bad, it was kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Where I don't know, like the Raven was kind of a.
Does anyone ever say it in the movie?
No. I don't think so. No, okay. And honestly, the entire time through the film, I sat wondering, you know, like what is the relevance of this Hasbro game that they are trying to build this franchise off of? And because a lot of it literally is like alien invasion film all the way through and through, almost Transformers ish. And I know I got a lot of heat for that, but there's like a 5 minute period of the film where you understand what gave them the right to call this battleship, where they're literally tracking these alien machines under the water by the waves it's creating off of the buoys throughout the ocean. And it's like picking up the sonar and he says, you know, fire a missile, the blah, blah, blah coordinates. And it's just like, and the screen that the seamen are looking at in the battleship, you know, it's like the game board. I mean, that's their whole thing. It's bad. Peter Berg, I usually like him as a director. Like, I loved his film, The Kingdom. I don't know if you remember that with Jason Bateman. Great movie. I love Friday Night Lights, the series.
Jamie Foxx in that, too.
He was, yeah. Jamie Foxx was in that.
That's a pretty good movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
But this was bad, dude. Real bad. And The Raven was, like, trying to be, like, kind of like a Sherlock Holmes, how they redid that. And, kind of hip and quick at points.
I hear what you
Yeah, like, kind of that mixed with, like, a Sleepy Hollow vibe, where both those films were good, but this one was not. John Cusack is actually kind of cool in it, as Edgar Allan Poe, but there's nothing.
It's not his fault.
I don't think it is, because I think he does what he can with it. Yeah. Luke Evans is the inspector in it. He's in the upcoming Hobbit films. But, I mean, not really much there. I really wouldn't recommend it.
Doesn't that seem like kind of a trend now? Or maybe I'm going to say it's a trend, and I'm not going to be able to name another example of it. But just the whole John Cusack as Edgar Allan Poe kind of sounds interesting.
Yeah.
But he's like, Oh, he's on the trail of a murderer.
Yep.
And the murders have to do with his story. I mean, it's like at that point you kind of start strange. To go, okay, less interesting to me than a movie about Edgar Allan Poe starring John Cusack would be. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Like, agreed.
Like that would have like been
there was
so
enough
much
there was
better.
Enough darkness in that guy's life that it would have made for an interesting movie. So I don't know. It's always strange to me when they take something interesting and they stick that little bit of fiction on top of it. That's to me less interesting.
Right.
But, yeah. And this whole film is built around like the title card at the beginning. It's like, you know, Edgar Allan Poe's last 2 days like were a mystery of where he was, and he was found on a park bench in Baltimore. You know, dead, and no one knew what happened. Those 48
our best
hours.
Guess is that he was solving an elaborate. Solving.
You know, it's like no one knew where he was for 48 hours. Then it's like 48 hours before, here I am solving shit up. You know, like there's a body, and it's based off of Pit and the Pendulum and whatever. Oh, man. I don't know. It's not good.
It doesn't sound.
But I will say, I did see a really great movie before we get into these deeper discussions. It's a documentary that's in limited release right now. I saw it at the Charles Theater here in Baltimore this week. It's called The Queen of Versailles. It's been through the festival circuit. I've heard a lot of really great things about it. And I was very, very happy with, you know, my experience afterwards. Lauren Greenfeld is the director. It's basically a documentary about David Siegel, who is the CEO founder of Westgate Resort. So if you've ever been to Orlando or Vegas, you've probably seen their resorts and almost gone on one of their little tours for free park tickets or did like I did in Orlando a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But it's basically about him and his wife trying to build what would be the second largest personal or privately owned estate in the United States. Like I think it's like 90,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. You know, they went to Versailles, saw this castle, like I want to build this as our new home.
That's a natural reaction.
Yeah. I mean, I do it all the time. Like, you know, I just want to build myself Disneyland in my backyard, but you know, this guy's really rich, or at least he was. It's just a really timely film because it really talks about, you can see where they started making the film was prior to 2008 when the market crashed and everything went down with the banks. And saw how high they were living and all these aspirations. They could just do whatever they want. And, you know, in seeing how it even affected.
So they were following them before everything went to hell. Okay. I love that when the documentarian happened to be there.
And something crazy.
For something interesting. Yeah. Where they just followed somebody long enough to actually get a little bit of real life. Rather than, like, somebody going out with, you know, here's what I'm trying to depict and, you know.
Like, and that's what makes the film work so much is that, you know, the first, like, 30, 40 minutes when you're watching it. It's prior to that, you know, and it's like, oh, they're so rich. They have everything in the world. Like you look at the film and I'm just like at their lives and like people really live like this, you know, now, even still after that. But, and that moment in the film when that happens, that's where it really gets amazing to me and really intriguing because their entire demeanor prior to that in their little side one, you know, their like offside interviews that they're doing with all the, you know, the husband and wife. They're all like, oh, yeah, we're doing this. We're building this. It's like we want to make it like Versailles. And then that, you know, that event happens and they change, you know, their willingness to talk to the camera, their willingness to interview with the filmmaker, the husband specifically, who now is actually suing the filmmaker for defamation of character.
Really?
Yeah. But I mean, you know, he's got nothing. He's got no case because he signed off and everything because he literally the second half of the film, he kind of comes off like an asshole to his family, to his coworkers or to to his employees. I mean, it's a really interesting study about, you know, I mean, money, power, you know, how even I guess the economy downturn affected everybody.
Right.
But, you know, I'd recommend checking that out for sure. I mean, I'm sure if you're in a major city, it's probably at an art house cinema. Again, it's called The Queen of Versailles. It's probably a movie that might come up around Oscar time, I think. It's really good.
Really cool.
Well, it did get great reviews, and it sounded really interesting.
Yeah, it's got like a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes right now, and it's one of the most well-reviewed documentaries of the year, so I'd check it out.
Most of the reviews seem to be pretty gentle with the wife, but very very negative towards the husband.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he comes off like she seems like she's the needy wife. Like, she wants everything. She's very materialistic. But when it starts to go bad, she seems like the one that's trying to make ends meet and, like, to, in some ways, sacrifice certain things. Yeah. But then the next scene, she's, like, you know, splurging on something. So you can tell that she's fighting that urge.
Mm-hmm.
But she's trying to, like, keep the family unit together because, you know, it just splinters for sure. And he just kind of is so immersed in the business and saving his company and not having to sell this new casino they built in Vegas and this new house they're building. It's just you see him completely disconnect from the idea of wanting to provide for his family with all this money in terms of I really just care about my business and, you know, what my business affords me to do with my life.
Right.
And that's quality. I'd recommend it for sure.
I saw one more movie.
What's that?
Man, it is a found footage movie.
Oh,
it's totally different.
What? A found footage movie?
Yeah.
What is this?
It's called Snow on the Bluff.
Snow on the Bluff.
So it is a story about a gangster from Atlanta. He's like in the middle of Atlanta in a terrible area, and some college documentarians want to like film a drug deal. He steals the camera, and then he just documents his life from that point on. It is one of the craziest movies I think I've ever seen.
Wow.
Think The Wire mixed with like Paranormal, mixed with like any cop show you've ever seen. It's really strange. My friend suggested it to me because I'm.
Is it new?
It's on Netflix right now. Directed by Damon Russell, who did Missing Girl, which is a okay movie, but it's insane.
Snow in the Bluff.
Snow on the Bluff.
On the Bluff.
You should watch the trailer. It's like weird. If you like crime drama / wiry sort of stuff,
yeah,
you'll enjoy it. It's very weird.
Okay.
It goes from like insane to like almost like hard to watch, just how it picks up.
Really?
Yeah, because he's like trying to make it, and he's documenting
violence or just
violence, and just it feels very real. Feels very real, and that's mostly because the guy that did the movie, the guy that stars in the movie, his name is Curtis Snow. He used to be a drug dealer, so a lot of the people that he's using are actual like dealers, and it feels real. So it's weird. Because found footage is always done with like scary movies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. To see it done in an urban environment is something I've never seen before. So check it out. Snow on the Bluff. It's on Netflix, actually. I never thought I'd ever say that. I hate saying that.
What?
I'm really uncomfortable with, I hate Netflix.
Why do you hate Netflix, Ronald?
Oh, come on. Are we going to talk about this again?
Is this an old subject?
No, I'd love to bring you in on this.
So I just don't like the idea that like, all those great movies are kind of put on this, like, in this, like, basket of movies. So, like, somebody's work is just put on a queue. Like, that'll never be seen. And it's just kind of treated like, I don't know, the value of things is lowering.
Be so much better if it were sitting on a server somewhere and someone were downloading it for free.
That's a great point, John. Yeah. It's weird. I wonder if that actually happens.
Man.
Do you think anybody does that?
There's no way that people would do that.
Do they get any profit from that?
Netflix? Absolutely.
The people?
Absolutely. The royalties, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm sure they get...
I don't know what it is, but yeah, I mean, right. They get per streams.
Well, I guess...
I thought you were going to go on your whole rant about like...
I'm not going to go on it. I usually go on it. I'm not going to go on a rant about
we have
it.
A lot of conversation about Netflix and their charging and streaming.
I hate Netflix.
Then why do you have it?
I don't have it. I use somebody else's.
Why use it then?
Why, yeah. No.
My friend told me about it.
That's a real principled stand. I won't pay for it. I'll borrow it.
I'll steal it. Yeah. Straight up.
I was going to watch it. And
yo, give me your login.
There was no other place to watch it. And he's like, watch it on Netflix.
I should find a login for somebody that has access to one of those servers where they're all just stored and downloaded.
What the heck? I don't know what you're talking about.
If you ever meet anybody like that, first you kick them in the nuts.
Then you ask for
it. Because, you know, the filmmakers aren't getting any money from that.
Yeah. They are.
That's your heartstrings are being pulled now, aren't they?
Oh, they're getting a 10 rating on IMDb.
Are you giving them a 10?
Oh, yeah.
Are you giving them a 10 on IMDb? Right.
They're getting the Ronald James bump.
Their life is done.
Yep. Done and done.
I'm going to go out like, oh, he gave it a 10. I got to go out and buy it now.
I got to go out and buy it.
Best promotion that any filmmaker could ask for. Ronald's 10 score on IMDb.
Exactly.
give me all your movies for free. I'll give you a 10.
Right.
That's a good pitch, man.
Right.
You got anything else you want to throw in here before we get off on too much of a tangent?
That's it.
All right, so kind of get into the we're going to talk about two really feature films.
Mm-hmm.
That one's already in theaters. One just came out in theaters.
By the time
you're listening to this episode, we're going to talk about Paranorman first.
Yep.
Paranorman comes out, actually just came out today, yesterday, depending when you're listening to this.
Yeah, we just saw it.
Yeah, we just saw it this evening. We're recording this on the 16th of August, but... it's the second feature from Laika Films, who did Coraline, from Focus Features. We don't want to get too much into like kind of going through the plot, but I mean, basically it's about a young kid who sees ghosts. He has a connection with the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
He's made fun of it by his family, you know, his peers at school. But it actually comes into being, you know, a purpose in life. You know, there's a curse on the town that he lives in. That maybe he's our savior, you know, he's the one that can break the curse.
Of all the things that still feel like magic to me, stop motion animation is one of them. You know, I just get totally lost in it. And this one was amazing in terms of the details. And even looking at like the flesh, with the way they would color the flesh, and you felt like it had that kind of translucence. It almost felt as detailed as like one of today's CG animated films.
That attention to detail is pretty amazing. Everything from like panty lines to it's weird.
Everyone in this movie looked jacked up. That was one thing. This movie was everybody's face was asymmetrical and kind of screwed up. They kind of made you see that the real monsters in this town were all the people, his parents and the townsfolk and stuff. And everybody had this kind of crazy, kind of almost gothic, scary look to them. You know?
I feel like some of those, like the quote, like the set design, like the cars in the town and the houses and even the people's faces. It like reminded me a lot of like, I don't know if you like a Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
I got that vibe like through the whole film. And yeah, I would agree with you 100%. Like, there was a lot of moments during the movie where I like literally was watching like fingertips.
Yeah.
You know, like just hairs on their head, you know, little weird things that through like CG with like Pixar films and things that we've become so accustomed to. It's so seamless now and it's beautiful and it's art, you know. But this is something that I feel like a lot of people, you know, and admittedly myself up to a few years ago, like didn't really know a lot about,
right,
you know, or have a whole lot of exposure to. So seeing films like this and Carline and, you know, not only does it keep getting better, but literally there are moments where I'm like, I can't believe this is stop motion. You know, it is mind blowing. And even some of like the action scenes and action, quote unquote, scenes in the film and a lot like where there's a lot of motion, like that whole chase scene throughout the film. Like it just I can't believe it. You know, it's amazing. It's gorgeous. And
it was all the movie was all about like the atmosphere. I mean, really, the plot's not much. I mean, the plot's rather, you know, like there's a lot of wheel spinning in the middle of the movie. And in fact, the middle third, I never got bored. But at the middle third, I found myself watching things more so than I was really watching the movie. Then when it got towards the third act, I kind of felt my interest pick back up again because it actually then did become, I mean, it is kind of a unique story.
The one part that really didn't sit well with me was that he almost said at one point in the movie, even if someone kills you, you have to learn to forgive them. That's a little weird.
Did he come out and say that, or did he kind of imply that?
He kind of implied it. He almost literally said it to the
Well, let's get into that, because like I have a 4.5-year-old, and we watch all kinds of stuff that's basically PG that doesn't seem to get as dark as this movie really does. Dark, this movie, I think because of how much it deals with death and kind of the sort of the kind of ugly side of that. Like, I mean, these ghosts are all, you know, really it's sort of sad. Like these ghosts are all seemingly kind of forgotten.
They're stuck.
People stuck. And they even get into why people are ghosts in the movie. And, you know, it has a lot to do with the usual reasons that they have some unfinished business or there's something holding them back or people that knew them are holding them back or something. So you get the idea that these ghosts are all kind of like lost people and it just has this, I mean, it's cool that it has such a frank attitude about death, but I began to wonder, like, okay, what is the right age for a kid to watch this movie? I mean,
I'm sure. It's kind of heavy.
It is.
Yeah, and it's like heavy. It gets even heavier. I mean, without going too deeply into the plot, it centers around a little girl who the townspeople think is a witch, and she's basically punished like a witch.
Yeah.
And that they don't really flinch too much from saying that these people killed this little girl.
And then it's celebrated every year. Like on top of that, it's celebrated through like a play. Yeah. They recount everything that happened to this girl.
Yeah, there's like a school pageant where the kids are involved in reenacting.
Thing. Like I think the weird part about it is like that combined with the bullying issues. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of like heavy stuff. So It's weird. It's like, I don't know if I would necessarily show my little kid this yet. That seems like a, man, like 11, 12 sort of thing. I don't know. Yeah. Just because it immediately will, it will make this.
Let's say that a sophisticated fourth grader should be able to handle this.
Right.
If they're already reading chapter books and stuff, they're dealing with death. But I think that's the main thing is it just deals with death in a really unsentimental way.
You said it. I mean, I think you kind of nailed it the way you put it initially is that it's very to the point, and it's very, I mean, and then the ways that they explain it, you know, multiple times in the film are very, you know, kind of unfinished business, you know, it's still connected to somebody, it's still alive. You know, the things that, like, you know, as adults we've heard before, but to see it in a film that's like a kid's film, you know, or being, I think, for the most part, marketed as a kid's film, much like Coraline was, and even talk about Coraline was very much very dark. I mean,
no real surprise, I guess, because Coraline may have even been more horrific in a strange
exactly.
way.
I was
the notion of like what happens in Coraline is scarier, like the people being replaced with these weird
dots, you know, like button on. yeah, I mean that's scary. And this is I think this has a little more of, like, I guess, like, the family, like, the kid element to it to me. And because, like, the kids in the film are more goofy, you know, they're more, they're out in society, they're in a school setting, they're not just, you know, you see Norman, like, kind of getting teased, and you see him, like...
The movie never shies away from the fact that these kids are kind of losers. Yeah. We talked about it a little while after. I compared it to The Goonies, which is a movie I don't think really has aged that well for me. I saw it as a grown man, and I realized maybe it wasn't meant for a grown man, but it was perfect for me when I was 11. But I remember at that movie, it felt like a made for kids in a way that felt like you were kind of getting away with something. Like, the kids were all kind of sneaking around and going on these adventures, and I think there was a couple of curse words in there, and they were like, you know, like... kind of like looking up a girl's skirt, that level of sexuality, but it was in there. And I felt like that movie sort of tapped into something that's a similar vibe to this. This almost had that sort of Spielberg Amblin movie from the 80s kind of vibe, a warmth to it. But still, when you got down to it, the conclusion where he's talking to the little girl and kind of trying to lift the curse. I mean, that conversation was a little sad. It was kind of depressing. It was heavy. I mean, it was, you know.
I think it's heavier than Coraline.
I think it's heavier emotionally, but Coraline gave you the willies more, I think.
Yeah, I liked it, though.
I think also, like, a piece of it, you know, because it's about, like, a witch hunt, and the town is all about this Halloween, or this, not Halloween, like, the anniversary of this happening, and, you know, the film...
It almost felt like The Simpsons or South Park or something, where the whole town just goes batshit.
Yeah, exactly, you know? That's what I was going to say.
And then everyone kind of seemingly goes back, you know, they trash the town.
It just elevates or escalates, like, from the get-go, because, like, you know, the film opens a really cool... moment with him and his grandmother, where we're introduced to the idea that this is a ghost, you know, that he's talking to, and they're watching, like, a zombie film, you know, on the television, like a kid watching a zombie film.
Yeah,
you know, like, should the parents have left him alone to watch a zombie film to begin with? There's a question.
Yeah,
you know, but he is.
Yeah,
and you know, that's kind of the full circle that we come around with at the end when we're talking about his family accepting him. He's not alone in the room watching it. You know, he's there with his family.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, I think, to see it come full circle, because, like, that set the tone for the whole film for me.
Yeah.
That, like, we see this, like, you know, very cliched zombie film.
Well, but it's also such a relatable moment.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
And
it
I mean,
felt a bit preachy, though.
What, at the end?
Period.
The whole film?
There were a few scenes, there were two or three lessons that someone said out loud. Like, the one is even if someone kills you, forgive them.
Right. They killed, like, this girl wasn't beat up and then she died of, like, old age. She was killed.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like...
They don't get into how, but we figure it was like, burned or hung or something.
You need to forgive her. And then...
The first time where it really felt like the movie slowed down for a line was when the grandmother, I won't say... what the grandmother is. I don't want to give too much away, but she says to Norman, you know, it's okay to be afraid unless it makes you someone who you're not, or unless it makes you act like someone who you're not or something. And it was that's an interesting lesson. But again, I don't know that when I'm really terrified, if I'm going to be thinking, am I acting like someone?
This is not me at all.
Yeah, right. The classic Walker.
Classic.
Shitting his pants in fear again.
I also like the scene where the zombies were reacting to, like, modern day, when they're, like, looking around.
When,
like,
they're in the town.
Yeah.
And, like, they're kind of scared of it.
Well, I like the fact that was when they showed the tilt that the people were really going to be the scary ones.
Yeah.
Because, like, you've sort of, and I have to admit, maybe that was when the steam went out of the movie for a little while for me, because they spend the whole middle section kind of knowing that the zombies that we've been watching are not really evil and kind of figuring out that the witch is not really evil. And it sort of was like, what are we hoping to see happen here? It just felt like everyone was kind of hanging around.
There was one part that I'm going to complain about. So the looming thing, the big thing that was supposed to happen was that she was supposed to bring back the dead.
Yeah.
Just brought back those seven people.
Yeah.
And the big threat that was supposed to exist never existed.
Right.
I thought at some point they were going to, like, merge from the ground.
Yeah.
You know, like, emerge.
That's what I mean. Like, you could just let these zombies roam around. They're just, they're just irritating. They're not doing any harm.
Right. They were just chasing people around and touching them. And he could walk by them.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed that. He literally pushed them out of the way a couple of times. So that was a little strange. So I was like, man, what is the danger in this movie besides the cloud in the sky?
Yeah.
All right.
Scary witch cloud.
Yeah, witch cloud.
There's one other thing that I don't know if we're going to spoil, but there's definitely a joke at the end of the movie that just about is worth it for the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And when you get to it, you'll know. It's like, it's definitely...
It's a cool joke.
Yeah, it's a joke, but it's also not... I mean, maybe it's calling it a joke is not quite right, but there's a nice character beat. There's a nice sort of resolution of a character arc towards the end that actually sort of lets you realize where the movie's heart is at. And it kind of, I don't know, it made you laugh, but it also kind of made you glad that, you know, you're living in 2012.
Yep. I think that kind of stays consistent through the film, though, because there's a few scenes like where you kind of mentioned like the Goonies thing, you know, where you're like, this is a PG film, you know, like mm-hmm. it's rated PG.
Yeah.
For some of the jokes that they go for, or even just some of the dialogue that's in the film.
Something about going to hell in it.
Yeah. Like, yeah. yeah. Like it's kind of consistent. Like they kind of went for it a lot.
And there's a reference to the F word.
Yeah.
And there's cool, there's a chick with a round ass in the zombie movie he's watching.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And the sister's ass was very big.
It's very hippie. Yeah. Yep.
I love hippies.
Physical hippies, not physical. Philosophical hippies.
But I don't know. I think overall we all enjoyed the film.
I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I think anybody that was a fan of Coraline, I feel like this, like where the conversation is always like Nightmare Before Christmas. Is it a Halloween or a Christmas film? When you know, like it? The perennial kind of thing. This is the entry, I think, into something that may become like a standard like Halloween type thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be something like where kids or even, you know, older adults that are into this. It's like a film that'd be a great watch, you know, that time of year. Yeah,
the movie it made me think of was one from the 80s. You guys may remember Monster Squad.
Oh, you ever see man, Monster Squad? I love Monster Squad.
But that was a movie that kept coming to mind for me because that was a similar... Absolutely. Just in the sense that it was like this, you end up with this... And that was the other thing that made me think of the Goonies, too, which is you end up with this ragtag group of kids. It's like it's one kid's older brother looking for him and this one older sister looking for her younger brother. Yeah. And then they end up with the other little friend and the bully shows up and it's just kind of like... It's this group of kids. It's just like any kind of horror movie where there's a group of characters thrown together kind of by happenstance that at the end of it, you sort of see they may not be friends when they're back at school on Monday, but they've, you know, something happened
together.
Something real happened.
Yeah. We actually talked about Monster Squad on an earlier episode. Have you seen Attack the Black?
Attack the Block. Yeah.
Attack the Black.
Attack the Black.
Yeah. That's a movie, I mean, too, like with that Monster Squad vibe as I look at Ronald.
Right. Ronald's getting kind of scared.
Attack the Block.
Attack the Block was fantastic.
Yeah,
it was.
Like, it was one of my, it was one of those rare occasions where I just knew like, okay, I could recommend this movie to anybody and they're going to like it.
We love that movie.
I want to see it again. I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah, I loved how inventive the creature was in that. Like, I love when someone does something that you can look at and say, well, that's cheap or that's clearly a budgetary concern, but they did something so creative.
Yeah.
And it was so simple and so alien. And when there's like a swarm of them on the outside of the building, it's like, that's all you really needed to see to kind of go, okay.
Right.
The glowing critters.
All these movies kind of, you know, there's definitely a thread.
Fine with that.
This like, kind of like, into some it's of like those... light horror meets kind of adventure and there's threat of something worse happening.
But right.
Most part.
Definitely. Yeah, well, I mean, I think we'd all recommend seeing Paranorman in theaters. You know, real quick.
I would say, but I think the main thing is, if you're like me and you have a four-year-old that loves Scooby-Doo and loves zombies and loves Dracula and all that stuff and really loves to play silly, scared, but not be scared, don't think that this is the kind of PG that you can take a little kid to. I feel like this movie would... Yeah. It more about the questions about death and what happens when the you die and that kind of stuff.
The kids got really quiet in the theater when we got to some
of I almost felt like some parents... There were some moments where I felt like the parents must have been thinking, oh, should a six-year-old be here? Because there were some young kids there at the screening. Yeah, the other thing I think worth mentioning before we leave it completely is John Bryan's soundtrack.
Oh, God.
You actually... I kept waiting for it to turn into something kind of more... animated, and then I realized about halfway in, like, no, the music is really scoring the moodiness. Like, the music was kind of sad and kind of really played into that sense of longing and a kind of outcast kid sort of vibe that it was going for.
You remember taking a note during the film, like, every time, any scene where there was, like, a chase involved?
Yeah.
It had, like, that really, like, monotone, like, synthesizer. It sounded very, like, it sounded like an 80s horror movie.
There was a moment when the zombies come up out of the ground that with the soundtrack, it sounded almost like a John Carpenter movie. Yeah. Like, a real simple synthesizer.
It reminded me, like,
part.
Halloween-y.
That kept happening. Yeah. They kept playing that jingle, like, right when they would show the zombies.
The zombies. I love that.
But then when it was really so cool. Like, but the main theme was just this kind of sad little pretty piece of John Bryan music that, you know, might be a theme for the show.
It was good.
We'll probably use it someday.
Right, we should.
I want to create that mood. So what's the next movie we're going to talk about?
Total Recall.
Total Remake.
Total Remake. Oh, man.
Or Reimagining? Or no, just
Total Reboot.
Total Reboot. So the 2012 remake of Total Recall, which came out 12 years prior.
No.
12? 20.
22.
Actually. Oh, my Jesus.
I know, I felt
22
old
2 years
when I realized that.
Well, 1990 was 22.
When you said 12 just now, I thought you were right.
Right.
Until you
and
like
I thought about it. I was like 19. You're right. It was 22 years. Wow.
22 years ago.
So this one.
And that's 22 years of me not seeing Total Recall.
Yeah, John, you haven't.
And then yesterday, I was surprised when I saw it. How? And again, I'm talking about the 1990 version. it's just a weird movie. I mean, it's very strange. It's got some weird. I mean, Verhoeven has done things that have like a satirical edge to them before. Like Starship Troopers definitely has a satirical edge to it. And I think there's a lot of people who would debate that Showgirls is almost like intentionally sleazy and bad. So you know, there's a sense of humor about some of these things.
Oh, sure.
And by all accounts, when Arnold Schwarzenegger came on to Total Recall, it had been passed around for a while, but when he came onto it, he got an unprecedented amount of control over like
blank check.
Picking the director and getting the script approved and all this stuff. So I think when you look at Total Recall and you see what a weird, silly movie it is, you really do see that as the product of Arnold Schwarzenegger being a pretty weird, silly man, I think.
He is. He absolutely is king of I gotcha, bitch moments where he just surprises people constantly. Yeah. I think he wrote that. He was like, look, if I can't surprise 10 people during the movie, I won't do it. He surprises people. He loves surprise. That is a common theme in his movie.
That just makes his life. He doesn't really care about the movie. He's like, if I get to surprise people, I'm all about it.
If I can just pop up on somebody and shoot them. And that, can we talk
and his about, one-liner.
Yeah, one-liner. He's got one one-liner is after he kills them.
The line that stuck with me that was like not really that funny of a line. It didn't really apply to anything, but when he's in the automated taxi, the Johnny cab, and the guy's talking to him, and he has to kind of commandeer it so he can take it where he needs to go.
Yeah.
And he crashes it. As he's getting out, the Johnny cab driver, the robotic cab driver, says, like, that'll be $11. And then he says, sue me, dickhead. Which is just, like, not a clever line. And there's also a scene where a little old lady fights with him over the suitcase. Because this is a Paul Verhoeven movie, the little lady has to say, you fucking asshole, as he's walking away.
She was super mad about that.
She was super mad about it and just like in a crass, coarse world.
One thing they had to say about this movie is when you get shot, I want you to shake as violently as humanly possible.
Yeah.
Because everybody dies like that, even when they're suffocating.
It hurts.
Right. When they're on Mars and they're suffocating, everybody's like, aah!
Well, the eyes slowly bugging
so
out.
So long. And you notice there's a lot of stretched skin in this movie?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of, like, latex heads and latex, stuff.
Which makes the movie very, very, very interesting.
I had sort of forgotten how gross the violence in a Paul Verhoeven movie is going to be.
It's gross.
Like, there's even a scene where the hero of the movie grabs someone and uses them as a human shield and shoots through their chest after the guy's dead. I think the theory is the guy's dead, so I'll keep using him.
Right.
But he keeps, like, spinning him around and shooting through him at other people. And everybody, it's bloody. And I really think you see the difference between a hard R, because this movie was actually originally rated NC-17.
Yeah.
But then you see a PG-13, like the remake, where they really, maybe they pushed the PG-13 as far as it could go, but there's no blood and there's none of that kind of over-the-top stylized violence that made the original.
There are three boobs, though.
I always knew you could show a pair of breasts in a PG-13 movie. I didn't know if you could show the third one, but I guess the theory is...
That seems a bit excessive.
I guess the theory is as long as they're attached to the same person.
Same woman, yeah.
Does that become a PG-15 movie?
That doesn't exist.
What?
No? I just added something. Like, right.
You just went
once you have breasts in it, I think you should...
But okay, so
knock it up two more years.
So yeah, I guess bridging from the original to the remake, which I guess we say original, but the original is an adaptation and an expansion on a Philip K. Dick short story from 1966,
right?
Called "We Can Remember It For You Wholesale," I believe.
Yeah.
I never have read the story, but
I
would be interested to know which details from the first movie were taken right from the story, because the second movie does a lot of things differently. I don't know if it's more like the story or less like the story, but it definitely does a few things that are exactly like the first movie. Yeah. And then it takes a few departures from there. But I don't know that the new one had as much character or was quite as like fun in a weird way as the original.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely didn't have the humor, like whether intentional or not, that the first one had. I think, and also, like, I've seen a couple of interviews with like Len Wiseman and even I think Jessica Biel, where they state that it's not really a remake of Total Recall, but basically an adaptation of the Philip K. Dick short story.
Right.
But, you know, you kind of like, a lot of us that haven't read that, like, admittedly, are going to compare it to Total Recall easily, like the 1990s film. But I mean, you're right, though. There's a lot of things in this film that are missing, like there's no traveling to Mars. You know, Quato's not in this
Quato,
film.
No Quato.
Yeah, I mean, which bothers me a lot.
Especially because that scene where we meet the guy who is the terrorist leader.
Yes.
That scene seemed like it needed something.
It could have easily been set up for that.
They basically, I mean, anyone who's familiar with the first one knows that Arnold Schwarzenegger or Colin Farrell, in both movies, they're kind of, the plot sort of is designed to get them to lead the bad guys to this person. In the first movie, you have this great reveal that the guy who we sort of think is the resistance leader actually is not the resistance leader, but the guy who has the resistance leader growing out of his the trunk of his body.
Right. And Quato's man.
Yeah.
By the way, the headshot.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that? The headshot was so gross.
The headshot to Quato?
Yes.
When Quato buys it?
It was so gross. Yeah. It was like his brain exploded. Man.
I love that he had this NPR voice.
It's so strange. I guess that's one of the more annoying parts about the new one. The fact that it looks very beautiful, shiny, and new.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes the lack of, say if they were going to do something really graphic, say in the original, they had like animatronics and stuff like that, and like prosthetics and latex, things that they can do to make it look a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Now with like all the things with like CGI and stuff like that, you can do a lot more, but at what cost?
I hate the idea that something doesn't hold up just because the effects don't look new or state-of-the-art anymore. But the original Total Recall, definitely, I mean, like, it looks old now when you watch it. Like, we were talking earlier about the last shot of the movie is them kissing against this landscape, you know, which would be, like, sort of the money shot of any other movie. But it's, you know, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger and Rachel, I'm going to say it wrong, Tikotin?
You have a beautiful, beautiful lady.
The athletic, demure, sleazy brunette as he dials up when he you know.
Wasn't she a prostitute?
She was, but she was like a demure prostitute.
Okay,
I remember that
yeah.
was like what she he did class. when he like selected which model of woman he wanted in his fantasy. Right. He said both demure and sleazy. But so he's kissing her at the end, and it's against this backdrop, which would be the moment because it's when they finally brought air to Mars and everything. This is a big climactic moment. Mm. And the blue screen or green screen job is so bad. Like, her hair is, like, disappearing and reappearing, and the edges of it are really bad. So that's the kind of movie we're talking about. This was state-of-the-art in 1990.
Total Recall, for all it was worth, was so exciting. Even when I watched it recently, I could not believe how fun it felt.
Well, I got sucked into it, you know, when I was watching it. It was, like, I was telling you guys that first it was watching it on Amazon Watch instantly, watching it like in standard def, but like really pixelated. It's like my eyes had to adjust to a movie that wasn't in HD, you know, which just shows what a spoiled brat I've become. But outside of that, it was almost like that put me in the mindset of, okay, I'm watching kind of watching an old movie, and these, you know, you're going to see almost like the walls of the sets shake a little bit, and you're going to see the obvious like green screening and stuff. I will always react a little bit more to something real than to something that's been completely computer generated. But I do think that what the new one gets right is some of those things that just have improved, like the way that they shoot action sequences and the way that certain effects are implemented and the way things are integrated. Like, you almost wish that this new one could have had some of the kind of what the fuck factor that original one had.
Right. I think one of Len Wiseman's powerhouse skills is, I think the dude knows how to shoot action really well.
Yeah.
And his CG work or whatever team he has working with him, I think it's pretty amazing. For all the flaws that this film has, I feel like the moments in the movie that I was really drawn in and really completely engrossed with it were a lot of the fighting scenes, the action scenes, the motion scenes. Mm-hmm. The scene where, you know, Colin Farrell, Kate Beckinsale, Jessica Biel, and this robot cop thing are in that elevator. You know, these are elevators that are moving both on a horizontal and a vertical mm-hmm. axis, and they're trying to time it, and they all end up in the same one, and they're all four of them fighting.
Yeah,
you know, jumping fighting. Back and forth with one another in this tight, claustrophobic shot. And it's shot in such a great way that I don't get lost
in
who's fighting who and where they are in this little cube. I mean, getting to that point, they're jumping from elevator to elevator, evading one another, you know, it's just really cool. And like, you really do, or at least personally, I like felt like, you know, not dread, but like a sense of urgency of like the timing it perfectly for the jump. And, you know, and each of them happened to do it, and one mm-hmm. of them slightly misses or whatever, but somehow they all end up in that one. And it's just really cool to me, like how that was shot. And I think beyond that, even like the car chase scene when they turn off whatever the hell the gravity thing that the cars have in the future, and mm-hmm. it just falls and he hits it. I just think it was like, I don't know, I think his eye for scope in terms of action is impressive. I mean, like, even like the Underworld films, I mean, the ones that he's done, whether you like those movies or not, I think like the action and CD, the blend of those two together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. he's good. At that.
Live Free or Die Hard, he did. I thought had a lot of incredible action.
Yeah, that was very fluid.
I didn't know he did that.
I would say that this. The one thing that this one kind of got right was that sense of just like a chase that doesn't end. You know, like once he finds out that he's been at the, you know, he's been either the victim or the center of this crazy conspiracy, and he's not who he thinks he is. Mm-hmm. They managed to do this great thing where the second he knows his wife is out to get him and she's part of the problem and he's got no safety anywhere. It feels like for the next 20, 30 minutes, it was just a chase, a nonstop chase.
All right. So I'm going to say something about Len Wiseman. I don't think that guy has a soul, man.
When wow, it comes that's really to, far out there.
The reason I say that is like
seems very arbitrary. Well, man, where'd that come from?
not when it, this movie. I don't.
Are you just jealous that he's married to Kate Beckinsale?
Yeah, that is
because I'll go on the record. But and
this
say that.
This movie has
Ronald. Do you think he makes all these movies about vampires because he's a vampire?
Maybe. his pace. Like, sure, the action scenes were good, but the movie in general has absolutely no soul. It has. The reason I like Total Recall is because it didn't take itself too seriously.
Right.
And this movie takes itself entirely too seriously. Almost to the point where, like, we've gotten accustomed to seeing a certain level of special effects, a certain mm-hmm. level of cinematography. And at this point, I'm not impressed by that anymore. What I am impressed by is the ability to take all of those things and weave in a good story into it. Nothing about this felt like a good story. You're absolutely right. I was definitely excited at those action scenes, but in between, it was so dry. It felt like a resume stuffer.
I feel like Kate Beckinsale's character probably had the most, for me at least, like, I guess, any kind of personality.
She seemed to be having the most fun.
Yeah, like, I think she kind of, yeah, like, fun. You know, like, she came off as kind of like that personality or that spark in the film. You know, I think they played like, that's my wife, like that line a little too much.
Like,
I
feel
like
there was like four times. I did not like that, man.
I wish he would have, when he shoots her, I wish he would have shot her in the head like, you know, Sharon Stone was.
Yeah.
Right.
Little things like that. I mean, another thing, let me just throw this out there.
Well, why do you hate women?
I know, I hate women, yeah. Put it out there. Thanks,
shoot
John.
Shoot them.
That's what I'm reading between the lines.
You know, I just like, you know, little things. You know, that you can throw the three-breast woman in there. You take out so many other things. I mean, but if you're going to go that far to try to link these two films, mm-hmm. little things like that, I mean, why not? Like, because it's, you know, you don't want to put a hole in your wife's head. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like so in the first one, there's two characters. Like, there's Sharon Stone as the wife or the mm-hmm. non-wife, the fake wife. And then there's the guy who kind of works directly under Cohagen.
Yeah, Michael Ironside.
Who is come over. Come over, McGee.
Yeah.
He, in this one, they kind of took that character and the character of the wife and made it one character. Yeah, one so person. That she's like not just the undercover agent pretending to be his wife, but she's also like a badass cop.
An agent.
And the one thing they don't really explain is when it becomes so personal for her.
Yeah.
Right.
That what she's just got to kill him. But I do think that was the thing I began to enjoy the most as the movie went on. And maybe the only thing that felt like a joke was that every time she would turn up, it was like the Terminator showing up. It was like she was no nonsense. And I just got to say, If I ever am in a dystopian future and my ex-wife or my fake wife is tracking me down and intends to kill me, I want it to be a tight little bitchy package like Kate Beckinsale in that movie. But she also seems to know exactly what she's doing. Like, I think, you know, her husband is the director.
Yeah.
So it's like he knows how to shoot her ass, basically. This, you know, this movie is like a poem.
Well done, sir.
Poem to her ass. Yeah. You knew Kate Beckinsale was coming back. They try to surprise you at the end with the fact that she's still involved. But you knew she didn't go down with the... with the transport. Well, let's talk a little bit about that.
I was going to say, that's something that, I don't know.
The transport.
I think my issue with it is, well, the idea is that this transport basically goes through the middle of the Earth.
Yeah.
In like, what, 20 minutes or something?
Yeah, if that. I mean, we can't go to Mars, but I mean, I guess, I don't know. My problem, I was thinking about this, is like, in this future, if they don't reference Mars and, you know, trying to it being inhabitable, but they can drill to the middle of the Earth, towards the core,
right,
without disrupting anything. Like,
there was that cool visual of when they get to the core that gravity switches around.
I love
that was kind of neat. Slick. But still, I was thinking the same thing you were, Steve. I was sitting there going, "But are we to believe they're passing through the core of the Earth right now?"
Right.
Like, it was that easy.
A little hot. Like, it was very strange. And
where are the dinosaurs? Aren't there dinosaurs in the center of the Earth?
Isn't that I think one? They're buried
in the in the place that they inhabited. This Asian.
Where it's always raining.
Always dirty. P.S. Why is it that everybody in the future is like black, leather clad, Matrix-y looking? Every movie's like that. After post-Matrix, everybody looks like that in the future. Everybody has a long jacket
in
on.
In the original, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I swear he's wearing like a members-only jacket at one point.
He is.
Or a London Fog, like a nice, like, you know. Nice, like, lined windbreaker over, like, cargo pants. And, yeah. So, like, this movie.
The muscular person in that movie, by the way.
That scene where he's, like, working on the construction he's site. Like, he's, like, he's got, like, all these dumpy construction worker friends. Just looks ridiculous. He's wearing, like, a little short-sleeve shirt. He has, like, a little, I swear he's got, like, a little scarf tied around his neck or something. And he's, like, drilling. Yeah. I feel like Colin Farrell was more credible as just an everyman. That's one thing. You know, just, he looked like a guy who could work in a factory.
But that was also the worst thing about it. Like, the thing that made him, like, very reasonable as this lead is also the thing that also made him very boring. Like, I feel like Kate Beckinsale went like wild with her character. Mm-hmm. It seemed like that if he would have let loose a little bit and been a little more crazy, I think I would have liked the movie a lot more.
If he'd been a little bit more of an unhinged weirdo like Arnold Schwarzenegger was.
In a lot of, gotcha. Like, a lot of those moments, I would have loved it. Sneaking up behind people and shooting.
Well, we were talking about the moment earlier where he plays the joke where he uses the hologram and they all shoot at the hologram. And then he comes out from behind and kills a bunch of guys. Then there's another scene where it's him standing there, and they've all got their guns trained on him, but they're not shooting him for some reason. Right. And he's laughing. Ha, 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 ha.
You're right, right.
Do you think I'm the real Quaid? And then they're still standing there, and he says, I am, or it is. And he just guns them all down. You know that he just...
He had to have written that.
Like they couldn't stop him.
He tried it. He wrote the script for Puerto Rico.
He's like, hold on, I know.
I got to rewrite.
I know
how to do this, yeah.
I love the variations in all the Arnold. I'm not even attempting. Yeah. I'm just very amused by your two. It goes from like a very Russian.
Yeah, mine turns
John's
Russian.
Very Russian.
Yeah, mine's very
his
Russian.
His is like the one I'm doing is like mid you're screaming like right after he screamed.
He's insane.
He's obnoxious. but it's so fun to watch.
Yeah, God.
He's so fun to watch.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. I can't wait to see him in the Expendables too.
He looks like he's given up.
Okay, so did anyone see the first Expendables? Because I can't. Okay, because this.
To me, it looks like
none of those actors were even on the set for more than like a couple of hours, and they just shot like a couple of scenes. I might be wrong, but it totally has that feel of like
any of the acts that you see in the credits. It's like bam, 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 and somebody.
Yeah,
those are the ones that shot like a half a day's worth.
Yeah.
So you're talking about Arnold, Bruce Willis. who else was in them? I can't remember all of them now. Maybe Jean-Claude Van Damme. I think he's like the villain. The Expendable group, like they're actually all in it pretty prominently. Yeah. You know, I mean, I saw the first one. It's not good. It's just straight up like blow as much shit up as you can. Sylvester Stallone. I know how to sell a movie ticket to a man kind of movie. Like, and that's all it is, you know. And Chuck Norris is.
But he also looks like, again, when they show him on the trailer, it really looks like, okay, they got him to walk down the street with a gun on one day.
And
you know,
shot.
And it does. His beard.
If they shot something in the background, they like green screen that background in.
They took like one of his old Total Gym commercials and just like kind of photoshopped the gun in his hand as he's doing a workout. And
if he turns around and his head doesn't seem to move exactly with his, you know, with his face. No, he looks like he's coloring his beard with a marker or something too.
He looks absolutely horrible.
He looks ridiculous.
So does Arnold Schwarzenegger. Looks like he just woke up and they were like, let's shoot this.
He's got like bed hair.
We're going back at it.
I'll just do a Mexican guy now.
Just covering the globe.
let's talk a little bit about Cohagen since we haven't really touched on that. Like Bryan Cranston, anyone who watches Breaking Bad knows is a great actor.
Right.
But didn't really make an impression. I think it has a lot to do with the fact, and we were talking about this earlier, because he's bald on Breaking Bad, he has to have his head shaved like in between seasons so he can't grow his hair out too much. For some reason, they decided this character needed like floppy hair, and so they gave him this terrible hairpiece.
It's a very big contrast from his actual like facial hair color.
It just doesn't.
It's just very bad looking.
It just doesn't work.
And Bryan Cranston is a good actor, but he was just very like, he was phoning it in. It felt very like...
There's a lot of characters in this film beyond just him where I feel like you could completely remove the character from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like even Bill Nighy's character, like, you know, it's...
make much of an impression.
At all. Like his guts of the film is like there for like 5 minutes and then it's done. There's no There's no urgency. There's nothing that he did in this film that has anything to do with how the movie ends, really.
Right.
Or, and I mean, Bryan Cranston, maybe a little bit in his character, but I would still feel the same way if I thought about the movie.
The main problem with the Bryan Cranston thing, too, is that when it does come down to like a fight between those two at the end, it just looks like Colin Farrell's like beating up his uncle or something like that. Like, you don't feel like Bryan Cranston is a physically threatening guy. Yeah. And I honestly think they kept him in the, you know, to kind of out of the story to maybe to make him more mysterious, the Cohagen character. But I thought he needed more scenes. Like in the first one, Cohagen's like busting people's chops left and right. I love the video phone in the first one. Yeah. I love the way they'll catch someone unawares. Like, so you call someone on a video phone, and their heads turn, and then you like say, hey, and then they turn towards the little video screen. But they Ronnie Cox movie. In the first one was kind of chewing the scenery, but he's this memorable kind of, you know, like an asshole.
Yeah.
And Bryan Cranston didn't even register as much of an asshole. He kind of just seems like a corporate prick that you just don't, he doesn't seem like, I guess we do see that he's kind of driving this whole plot, but he just doesn't, you don't feel his presence in the movie the way you felt Cohagen in the first. And really it comes down to the fact that the Army of Robots, not that interesting. Bryan Cranston, not that interesting. Kate Beckinsale, maybe not that interesting, but definitely the most, like, almost makes you think of the way Anne Hathaway had the effect on Dark Knight Rises of being kind of the most fun element. The person who seemed to be enjoying themselves the most. Kate Beckinsale seemed to really enjoy being the you know.
She was pretty fun to watch, too.
Yeah, the more I think about it and talk about it now, I like.
Terrible.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I still maintain that I think the action in the CG was really, really good.
No, about halfway in, because I remember before I saw it, I had heard Ronald's feelings and saying that he'd rather have VD than see this movie.
Oh, yes.
I don't think that's IMAX, true. Yeah. I don't think that's true. VD and 3D. I thought that, so about halfway into it, I was like, not bad. But then I started to feel my interest level just kind of waning when I realized it's off, like, man, it doesn't really have the interest, I guess that's a theme for tonight for me, is that middles of movies are problematic. Movies seem to be, that's usually when you can tell how much story they really have. It's like, if they've got a lot of story, the middle will feel just like, oh my God, it's just piling on. But
I like your spinning wheels thing.
Yeah,
that's really.
It's boring in the middle. It's very boring.
And it doesn't go anywhere from there for me. I mean, I think the third act is really what the worst part of the movie is.
Yeah.
Like the delivery and, you know, the resolution, this whole commitment that we've had to him figuring out what's going on, it's completely doesn't pay off at all. Not like the original, I mean, or the 1990 version.
Yeah.
There was something there that you were with the film the whole way and you got some sort of,
I like the way the first one, like there's ambiguity at the end of the first one. Right, you may not have caught it because it was really subtle, because it involved Arnold Schwarzenegger saying to his girlfriend, wait a minute, I just had a terrible thought.
Yeah.
Right.
What if this is a dream? I don't know who I am now. He's like, he just states that ambiguity. I feel like the new one didn't really even try to have an ambiguity. I mean, not that it really worked as an ambiguous point at the end of the last one, but like, I do think that this one was, that was one more way that this one kind of undershot.
Most boring scene in the entire movie was the scene where Bokeem Woodbine is talking to Quaid about it being fake or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
in the lobby.
Yeah. Most boring scene I've
and ever I liked seen. That's the scene that was standing in for, the scene in the first one where the weird little guy who's like the spokesman for Total Recall comes in, and the way that Quaid knows that this is real and that he can really gun this guy down is that a bead of sweat goes down his face. Yeah. In the new one, it's he thinks maybe Jessica Biel. Plus Colin Farrell seems awfully confused in that scene.
Very confused.
Like he's there's no reason why he should not trust this woman who seems like she's been wonderful to him. But then a few minutes talking to his friend who seems to be involved in some weird way, and he's like ready to shoot this girl, and then she sheds a tear and he decides not to. But it seems to me like, how does that prove she's not an illusion? Right. Because if she's an illusion programmed to fool him, then she might be able to shed a tear. But the guy sweating in the other one actually has that effect of letting him realize what's going on.
But
you know,
his argument for shooting her makes no sense.
Yeah.
He's like, come on, buddy.
If you shoot her, if you shoot her, you'll wake up.
Just shoot her, it'll all be fine. This is fake.
Your wife's out there and Kate Beckinsale's out like with a coat on, like all concerned.
Like, you're on the bed right now.
Forget that part where Kate Beckinsale tried to shoot you for about a half hour.
Very strange. His argument has no legs.
Mm-hmm.
And he's convincing, he says, come on, man, like 10, come on, man.
Yeah.
If I was fake, why would I do this?
Right. If I was fake, how could I stand here and say I'm real? You know?
Exactly. Those were his arguments, and that was the worst scene.
The one thing I liked about that scene was Jessica Biel actually did a good job of playing it as a person who didn't have a whole lot of options in that scene. Because
right.
if she tried to do anything, she'd be gunned down, possibly.
Right.
And she could see the situation was going to go one way or the other. So she was kind of like frozen. Whatever she said could hurt her at that moment. Yeah. I felt like she did a good job in that moment. And that was actually one of the few moments where I actually felt anything from her character was in that brief scene where you sort of go, okay, I don't, because I was thinking, I don't know how I would act if that was going on. Like, at some point, if two people were deciding whether someone should shoot me, at some point, I would run out of things to say.
It's like, freeze.
Yeah, you'd just be like, oh, God, how's this going to go?
That was his resolution. He was like, you know what? You're going to have to shoot her.
You're right. That's so nonsensical. So,
like, what? Why would that be? Can I just pinch myself?
No, I'm not going to shoot her.
You're
going to
have to kill
her. You're going to have to shoot her. Oh, okay.
All right. That was weird.
Yeah.
Obviously a flawed film. I think that's obviously the consensus.
Can I be completely honest with you? Bokeem Woodbine.
What, you've been holding back this whole time?
The reason why I wanted to see the movie, like, I heard he was going to be, I was like, I love his overacting. Mm-hmm. I have to see it.
Yeah.
He wasn't in it enough.
Did they kind of, well, in the first one,
he
too,
took the place of the black guy?
Like, he gets killed. He kind of, well, there was,
Can we talk about that? Should we go there?
Attack the Black. Let's talk a little bit about
this terrible 70s blaxploitation character that they had in the original
one. That's one of the major flaws of that movie, is that they've decided that in the future, I forget what year it is, but it's a couple hundred years maybe in the future, that you're on Mars even, and this guy is like Jimmy Walker on Good Times level, like jive talking black dude character.
He's
like,
come on, man, I gotta take you into town.
Well, he's even like, I got five kids to feed, you know,
what was that all about?
But to make it better, Ronald, not only is he a walk and talk and stereotype, but in the end, he turns out to be a traitor as well. A treacherous liar.
And he tries
to
kill them with a...
So some things just do not change. Right.
Even in 2084, sneaky black people would turn on you, try to kill you with a drill.
He even says something like, I'm going to drill you, fool, or something like that. It's like totally, it's the worst.
And then when he gets kicked, he's like, shit. Yeah.
It's very weird. So basically, you guys should just all watch the 1990s version.
You should.
$4.99 on Amazon, watch instantly.
It is hilarious.
At one time, the script was with David Cronenberg to direct. You know, who's done The Fly and Videodrome and Dead Ringers and all these crazy kind of Naked Lunch, the kind of crazy body horror type movies. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy that came up with the whole concept of the mutants on Mars in the original. And also Quato was his idea. And when you know that, it feels like a David Cronenberg movie. Like,
that makes sense.
You know, David Cronenberg wanted William Hurt to star in the lead. So you have William Hurt on one end of the spectrum and Arnold Schwarzenegger on the other. I mean, it's almost like one of those movies that gained many of its qualities just by going through so many hands and getting kicked around so much. So it became this weird, overloaded movie with all these crazy ideas. The new one, which is like really competently made, but, you know, I don't know if Lynn Wiseman has no soul, but I don't know that any of his movies really have much that sticks with me outside of the kind of kinetic action and just the sort of skill with that. No, I could actually see myself one day watching the Arnold Schwarzenegger version again, just because the moments that are crazy, like, he pulls the thing out of his nose, like that stretchy face thing, the fat woman suit.
There was like a nod to that in this one, like when he comes through the detector and like the woman's in front and you're like, is that, and it looks very much like the woman from the 90s version. Yeah. And you're like, oh, is that him? It's like a little wink at it. And then it's actually the guy behind her. That was kind
of
cool.
That's always made me feel weird. Let's look at the credit for her. Like when we get off of this podcast, I bet it says like fat, ugly woman.
I've noticed that.
Fat redhead.
Who gets the jobs to be you know how they have like dating movies? Who plays the ugly girl? Like who readily
when the
agrees?
Script says really ugly girl.
Right. It's like, oh, it's ugly. And it points to the girl and she's like digging in her nose. Yeah. And that's she's just looking normal. Like,
I got to start somewhere.
I got a small part. And, you know, I really think it's going to lead to bigger things. Right. I'm playing ugly piece of shit.
Ugly piece of shit.
Well, it's very adequately named. Yeah. I mean, the script, very descriptive.
Yeah.
Well, that's another thing. They totally fake you out with that in this one, that you think that maybe it's going to be, he's going to be dressed up as the woman again. The lovely, differently sized woman. Let's just face it. Yeah,
exactly.
Lovely, you know, someone's fantasy.
Someone's fantasy.
But in the new one, I think that kind of points out the difference between the two as well, that in the original one, you've got this crazy effect with the mask, the way that comes apart, and just the way she spends like 3 minutes, like again, a lot of shaking jowls, but it's a pretty crazy scene.
Does it malfunction?
It kind of malfunctions, yeah.
But why would it malfunction
that? Well, here's the thing that was weird. Because they asked it a question it wasn't prepared for.
Oh,
but I don't understand why if he's inside it, he couldn't just say
it.
But okay, so let's not get into the logic of that. But in the new one,
the way that they
did that, instead of having a crazy mask, it was like a collar that would send up a computer generated head as far as we see it, it's just the person. That to me was like visually so much less. Less memorable than what was in the original one. I think that that hits the nail on the head of the difference between the two movies. Like the new one has got like the state of the art effects, but the ideas behind them are not as
the soul. Like I think that in the future you imagine all these ridiculous things, so it's almost like he exercised the ability to. Like what if there was an explosive head that could split in half and put it together and throw it as a bomb.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Like, just making something futuristic for the sake of making it futuristic is kind of weird. Like, because it's not, it didn't feel very far-fetched to me. Like, the hologram thing was like, oh, okay, that was terrible.
Yeah.
It didn't feel cool. It didn't feel, that's
safe.
It's very safe.
Yeah, I agree.
If it would have been like a leg or something, I'm like, that is crazy.
That's like the body part you go for, a leg.
A leg.
So, wait a minute, I'm trying to figure it out. So he's disguising his leg.
Right.
Looks like Colin Farrell.
That's not his. That's not Quaid's leg.
It's a fake leg.
I know legs. That is not his leg.
Yeah, that's an
leg.
Asian guy's leg.
Right. That would have been cool, but it's just.
That would have been really cool.
Yeah. It's late.
It would have exploded.
All right, so consensus, Total Recall.
Yeah.
Pass.
Yeah. Paranormal.
Unless you're really like, if you just want the action, I'd say go for it. Yeah, otherwise, wait for it to come back.
I mean, literally, it was about maybe an hour into it before I started to feel kind of tired, but then it never really got me back after that point.
Yeah. Paranorman, though, I think we'd all say check out.
Yeah, definitely.
With John's little caveat to the children.
But I could see what you were saying about it kind of being like a future Halloween classic. You know,
definitely.
I'm kind of excited. Like, I want it to be that for me.
Yeah.
And like for my kids one day.
Yeah.
Whenever I have kids. We are going to try to get back on a regular schedule with trying to record these a little more frequently. As always, you can hit up the moviesmovie.net site, the Gmail account if you have any suggestions, feedback, thoughts on the movies that we've talked about today, or even suggestions for what you want us to review in the future.
Definitely.
What else we got? The facebook.com/movieschmovie. I'd say just check out the moviesmovie.net. You can get to anywhere else from there. Correct?
Yeah.
It's all linked through that, so that's all the best bet.
You can just Google it.
And then, as always, the podcast itself is available on iTunes for subscription, or you can download one-offs, and also a Mixcloud.
We're all over the place.
But, guys, thank you so much for listening, and please send some emails if you have suggestions.
Yep.
We always love the feedback, you know, always trying to make it better. So I don't have anything else to add unless you guys do.
I'm glad we're doing this. This is really nice to talk about movies.
Yeah.
There's that soul coming out right there.
I love it. And the three-breasted woman from the new Total Recall looks significantly better than the first one.
This is true.
She's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
She looks like a porn star a little bit. A little Asian, you know.
All right.
Ronald always wants to end on like some kind of bonerific moment. Yeah. He wants people to think about something sexual.
Right.
So to end the podcast on a sexual note. That's
right. Three breasts.
Three breasts.
Right in your face.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. As always, you've made our day.